So we're going to have a game seven, Barker. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Really?
Yeah, I said Dodgers in seven. I'm sticking with it. And I want Mr. Buehler and Mr. Morton to go head to head. And I want the Dodgers to, you know, have to make decisions.
Oh, you just, you know what you are? You're like.
I really do.
See, before you started doing this show, you never would have cheered for chaos.
Yeah.
Well, you're not a chaos guy. You're meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a chaos guy.
I want one time.
But yet here you are.
Yeah.
Ahead of game six. And you're basically the thing that's going to excite you the most is watch poor old Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
Have to make a decision. No, you're cheering for. You've become 2020. You are cheering for chaos.
Yeah, I want him to go out to the mound with to make a pitching change and give the catcher the wrong card. That's what I want. I thrive for that. That's what I want to see.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, why'd you call that pitch? Because the card said to.
That's the wrong card. You jackass.
I want to be right, and then the Dodgers win, of course, because you know being right's awesome.
I know,
but
it is. You should.
Yeah,
try it
well,
sometime.
You're wrong because you said Rays in six. Well, that ain't happening. So, it's I want to be right. Dodgers in seven.
Go Rays, go! Go Rays, go!
So yeah, I just I want to see. It just seems like it just feels like I see Kenley Jansen on his knees on the mound. With somebody running around third.
You see Kenley Jansen on the mound. There's going to be Dodgers fans in their knees all over the place. The Dodgers, by the way, can go for their first World Series since 88. Tonight, game six of the World Series, 8 o'clock, first pitch on all the Sportsnet channels. And, of course, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're going to be joined by Rick Dempsey at 2:25. Not only was he the catcher for the final out of the Dodgers' last World Series win in 88 against the A's. He also was the World Series MVP for the Baltimore Orioles in 1983. And good guy to talk to about what explains when a guy who, I don't know, I think Rick Dempsey hit like 220 in the regular season. He was just on fire in the World Series. It was like he became a different guy. So we'll talk to him about that. Because that does, it is strange. Look, was Howie Kendrick MVP of the World Series last year?
Mm-hmm.
Would you have said Howie Kendrick was your odds-on pick to be World Series MVP going in? Sometimes it happens.
He's a pretty good player, though. I wouldn't have said Brandon Lowe would be six for
Pat
whatever,
Borders. Thank
whatever,
you, Pat whatever, Borders, another guy.
Brandon Lowe is.
Yeah. So anyhow, we'll talk to Rick Dempsey. It'll be a lot of fun. He's an Orioles broadcaster.
I think it's easier to be bad and turn out to be good when it matters than to be really good and turn out to be bad. Because if you're really good going into a series, you think they're all high. Eyes are on you trying to figure out how to get you out. You got holes. Brandon Lowe's got, he don't like you ball up hard, and he don't like you ball in. So how do you get him out? Well, you don't throw him balls away. That's how you get him out. And, you know, I think it's a little bit easier for a guy to be a surprise and be pretty good and have a really good series. Kevin Kiermaier's having a good series. If I'd have said that to you, would you believe me?
No. Here's something interesting. We understand that pitchers are used differently than they have in the past. And there's a stat that my dear friend John Lowe of the Detroit Free Press invented. He's the guy who invented the quality stat. And everybody rolls their eyes, quality stats. Six innings or more, three earned runs or fewer.
That's a good stat.
But you know what? Now it's become a bit of a... Because if you're the Rays, I'll ask you this. I didn't know this. How many quality starts? How many quality starts? Travis McKenzie, Steven Strasburg was a World Series MVP last year.
Oh.
Steve Pierce was the MVP the year before. So there you go. Same thing holds.
Whatever.
How many quality starts? Six innings or more, three earned runs or fewer. How many quality starts have the Rays had this entire postseason?
Postseason?
Entire postseason. Everything included. Wild card, DS, championship series, World Series so far.
Well, zero seems like the obvious answer, but I'm going to say no to that. I'll say one.
One. Very good. Tyler Glasnow, game two of that wild card series against the Jays.
Yeah.
Six innings pitch.
Of course, it's against the Jays.
Well, there you go. Yeah. You knew now there was a catch there someplace. But my point is this, that going into this World Series, you know, we thought that the Rays pitching would be the strength that kind of carried them through to this.
It has been.
It has been, but it hasn't been, I don't think, as strong as people anticipated it being. I expected, and surely you did, Kevin, I expected more understanding how Kevin Cash uses his bullpen. I get all that. Understanding this is the team that invented the opener, et cetera, or at least trademarked the opener, if you want to call it, as opposed to inventing it. I did think we'd see more quality starts from Snell, Morton, and Glasnow. Well, I thought we'd see the
one of the
I thought
three.
We'd see more. More than one six-inning start.
Morton would make sense.
Exactly. I thought we'd see more than one six-inning start. And by Glasnow, Glasnow would have been the last of the three. If you had said to me going in the postseason, okay, only one Rays pitcher is going to pitch six innings, I would have gone, oh, it's got to be Morton.
Yeah, me too.
Then Snell. Hell, then I might go Yarbrough and then Glasnow. Because I just don't – Glasnow doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's going to go
– That's not the way they're made, though, I don't think. So that stat really doesn't surprise me a ton. You know, this is the way they're – when in doubt, go to another arm. That's kind of.
What are you laughing at?
You can't figure out the cord.
Well, the cord.
It's funny.
The cord pisses me off.
But it's. Yeah,
we should be doing wireless stuff.
Just think about this, Jeff.
Yes.
If they could score runs, they would have won this World Series already. Their pitching's been good enough to win these games. I mean, Tyler Glasnow's been.
Yeah.
He's had a bad inning here or there.
Tyler Glasnow. The Rays pitching in this World Series has kind of been the definition of just good enough to lose.
Their starting pitching has.
Starting pitching.
Yeah, their bullpen's been good.
Just good enough to lose. But, yeah, the bullpen's been fine. Well, I think we all, you know, doing all the reading on the lead-up to tonight's Game 6, everybody seems to be in the same position here, that they're – that the idea is, if you're the Rays, if you can score early against Tony Gonsolin, if you can score early, get him in the stretch, create chaos, and force Dave Roberts to start managing his pitching. Everybody seems to look at that as kind of the golden, that's the path forward for the Rays here. Do that, create chaos, hope that Blake Snell gives you six innings. And then go from there.
Innings, I think he has no chance of doing that. I think he's going to empty the tank. He'll go 4 1/3. He might go 5 innings, that kind of thing. 6 innings, that's asking too much. They don't really want him to do that. That's all hands on deck. They're going to get to the high leverage guys real quick.
They would have Yarbrough today, too, if they need him.
Yeah. All hands on deck. With the exception of
Charlie Morton.
And Glasnow.
So you could, theoretically, if you wanted to have fun with the Dodgers, you could follow Yarbrough up. You could bring Yarbrough in.
I'd rather have Fairbanks or Anderson or Castillo or even Aaron Loop.
Aaron Loop is money in the bank.
Sure thing.
590-590 is the text line. Again, Rick Dempsey will join us in a few minutes to talk about the last time the Dodgers won the World Series. Let me ask you this. This is going to get a lot of Dodgers fans pissed off, which is always a good thing to do. If the Dodgers win the World Series after a 60-game regular season, there will be people. I mean, there were people who were going to put an asterisk on the World Series anyhow. I'm not a fan of that because the players this year have had to deal with stuff players have never had to deal with before. It's the same thing like putting an asterisk on the Stanley Cup. You really can't do that? But I will tell you what, there will be a rush from baseball people to put an asterisk on this World Series if the Dodgers win.
Yeah, not me.
Because a lot of people are going to say, oh, yeah, Dodgers.
Let me ask you a question.
88, the only way they won a World Series was in a pandemic shortened season.
Let me ask you a question. If there was a 162-game season and I would have said the Rays and the Dodgers were going to be in the World Series, would that surprise you?
No. I would have picked both teams to be the World Series.
The best two teams in baseball are in the World Series.
That's correct.
No matter if it was 162 games or 60 games. That's not changing.
The Dodgers
have had to earn. If they win it, they've earned it. They've earned it. You know, the Braves weren't a pushover. They had to work their way through that. They had to earn that to move on. They've had the if they would beat the Rays, they've had to beat the Rays. The Rays haven't been, they haven't been beating themselves. And, you know, offensively, the Rays have always been not great at stringing together hits. They are an all or nothing lineup. That's no different in the playoffs. But, you know, Kirk, I think Kershaw maybe have taken a little bit of a step forward. I still think it's hard to talk elite when you can't pitch a guy third time through an order. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenley Jansen, you know, is Dave Roberts going to give him the ball? Let's say they're up 6-2. Is he getting the ball in the ninth inning? Just because it seems like the right thing to do.
Well, if you're asking me.
Up 6-2. No. They're up 6-2. Now, yeah. If it's 3-2, you hope you're giving it to Blake Treinen. That's who I'd be giving it to. Yeah. He's pitching the last two innings for me. That's if I'm winning.
I don't know. I mean, I know what I Kenley Jansen's not seeing the mound. For me,
Dave Roberts seems to think he's one of the highest leverage guys they got. He must be seeing now. Listen, you have to say that as a manager to keep people involved and you know stay ready. I'm going to come to you, even though you're really not going to come to him.
Yeah, what they're saying publicly and what he thinks privately are two different things. But look, my thinking is this: you've already used Kenley Jansen in this series,
yeah,
in a game that mattered. Why would you be surprised if he went back to him? Like I'm saying, I wouldn't.
I would.
Because
I'm very surprised.
I'm saying I wouldn't because I want
to win.
If I win the World Series, it's going to take a while before somebody's going to put their hand up and go, "Are you? You know, congratulations on winning the World Series. Why didn't you use Kenley Jansen?"
That's everybody knows why he didn't.
It's not going to happen. But I mean, there was that the thinking out there that Lemmings to a cliff, man. Dave Roberts, it's like Magnet.
Yeah.
Dave Roberts attracted to
a couple
Jansen.
Of interesting things. Betts, Muncy, and Bellinger were 0-for-9 the last time Blake Snell threw. I think if you keep those three guys are separated in their order. If you keep them from doing something big, they got a good chance of beating them. If you keep Betts from doing stuff, keep him off base, running all over the place. You keep Muncy away from fastball counts. You know, you can spin it and maybe get away from his power, that kind of thing. Cody Bellinger, you know, elevates some baseballs every once in a while. Make some good pitches against him. You can get him out. Can Blake Snell throw some more changeups? That'll be the interesting thing. It worked the time before. Is it going to work again against the best lineup in baseball? The spinning it for a strike early in counts to expand later in counts. With your best secondary pitch, can he do that again, or does he have to mix it up? Can he throw an 0-0 changeup for a strike, and not overthrow it? You know, an overthrown changeup from a lefty that throws 96 is 91. That's good hitting. Can he do those kind of things? That'll be an interesting thing to watch. And you know, Kevin Cash is going to go to high leverage as soon as he can. There's no question about. Is he going to mess that up coming out of the bullpen? No, he's got 3 or 4 guys down there. He's going to use them as soon as he can use them. But it's going to be that Dave Roberts. And I'm not joking about the, you know, chaos. But it's true. Track record says that, you know, he may mess this up. Or he is an organization. Dave Roberts is just the messenger.
No, Kevin Cash has already said that he's going to be really aggressive with his
Yandy
with his
Diaz,
bullpen.
You start him? He's 4
well,
for 11.
He has also talked about taking, and he didn't say he was going to change the lineup, but I think his comment was, we're going to take a look. We're going to sit down in the off day and take a look at the lineup, maybe around the fireplace. You know, they were going to have that sort of fire pit happening.
That's how that works.
Barky,
you got to figure after Gonsolin, you're probably seeing Alex Wood. That's who I would guess. He pitched 2 innings October 21st. Jeez, when Blake Snell pitched. So I got a lefty. Hottest hand? Or do you stick with what you've done all year?
I got to have Troy.
Righty pitching, I'm going here.
I got to have Troy.
I don't know.
I got to have Troy.
I think they've wasted Troy.
Oh, I do too.
I think him consistently not playing against good pitching who game plans against you.
I mean, I'm sure the numbers suggest there's a reason. Numbers and swing paths
doing. But that's the fireplace talk.
Yeah, I still the idea of burning G-Man Choi, fireplace, get it? The idea of burning G-Man Choi is a, you know, sort of to play a game of tactical bingo the way they did the other night. I was not a big fan of that. He's still, we've talked about this, right-handed velo. He's still the guy I want up there right now for the Rays. Maybe a Rosarina as well.
Because you almost think if you're Dave Roberts, you got to empty the tank trying to win this game. Yeah, you have Walker Buehler going tomorrow. You got to think he'll give you six plus.
One thing I really do want to talk about, and then I'm going to put it to bed before we bring Rick Dempsey on. But there was a lot of discussion yesterday in the Zoom calls, the off-day Zoom calls, about that steal of home again. And one of the topics that came up, and I apologize. We may have talked about this off-air, but a lot of people said they thought that Kevin Kiermaier may have helped out the catcher a bit by getting out of the way when Margot stole home. Now, I don't know. You know, the point was made, and it might have been Kevin Cash that made the point, look, we're all surprised, including the batter.
Why?
I'm just asking you.
I think people are begging. That's what I think. I think the first thing you think of when you're a hitter and you see something that surprises you, you want to get out of the way. How many hitters you ever know that a guy's trying to steal home that stands there and doesn't move? It never happens. Yeah. Because it consistently doesn't try. People don't try and steal home. So,
Here's what Kevin Cash said, though. Here was Kevin Cash's comments. Just play this, Derek, if you could.
There were so many what ifs on in that situation. If KK sits there and the ball hits KK, what happens? If KK sits there and swings at it and puts the ball in play, I have no idea what happens on that instance. But no, I do not think what KK had any effect on him being safer out. Looking back on it, if Kershaw would have thrown the ball another 6 inches away from Barnes, maybe Margot's hand gets in there. The actually watching the play, it was a lot closer than maybe I thought it was as it happened. But look, KK wasn't prepared for it. I don't think anybody was prepared for it. And that's what made it, arguably a chance to be a special play.
All right. That was Kevin Cash yesterday. And I just wanted to revisit that because it's still a bit of a talking point. But there you go. That's Kevin Cash's explanation of it. I wonder now if Kevin Cash looks back on that play differently.
Yeah, I know when I was a hitter and I saw a pitcher step off the rubber.
Right.
I moved away from where I was standing in the batter's box. It's
human nature.
It is exactly what it is.
As soon as
you see that happen, things stop. You sort of get lost in what do I do now? Yeah, I have no, because it's not normal to, how many hitters know to stand there and actually swing at a ball that's lobbed in there? Would you even have enough thought process thinking ahead enough to even do that?
I know that you've played and you've stood up there.
I know exactly what I would have done, exactly what.
All right.
KK.
Good.
KK, which I've never heard him called.
Well, Kevin Kiermaier.
I get it. I mean, you got to be his buddy to call him KK. I'm not his buddy.
Or his manager.
There you go. So that's. Yeah, look, if he makes that.
Oh, I have
the Rays are up 3-2.
Yeah, I have no problem with
the Rays are going for the World Series tonight.
I've been very consistent. I have no problem with that play. I have no problem with that. But I just found that part kind of interesting because it's there are a lot of people are talking about that, and hey, I want to put it to bed because it's done, it's gone, and let's see what happens tonight.
Yeah, I think
2020, man.
Yeah, I look. Yeah,
Manuel Margot could do it again.
Do you think? You think he'd have enough gumption to?
Hell yeah, it's the Rays.
First you don't succeed.
That's right.
Try again.
Rick Dempsey caught the last out of the last Dodgers World Series win. It was from Oral Hershiser, the 1988 World Series, Game 5. Rick Dempsey also is a World Series MVP with a very good 1983 Baltimore Orioles team that included our very good friend Ken Singleton. So, the perfect guy to talk about the Dodgers and about winning the World Series and all that entails. So Orioles broadcaster Rick Dempsey will join us next. This is Baseball Central, just ahead of Game 6 on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
They've done it. like the 1969 Mets. It's the impossible dream revisited. A fastball, 9 strikeouts for Hershiser. He gives up a total of 4 hits, and look at the mob. It looked like he was going to be replaced, but he hung in there. Bulldog is quite a name. And meanwhile, Jose Canseco quietly goes back to the dressing room. The biggest single gun for the Oakland Athletics, thoroughly muffled in the series. And Mr. Oral Hershiser Sr. can finally relax.
That is the great Vin Scully with the call. The Los Angeles Dodgers, the final out of their last World Series, 1988, their last World Series win. Actually, that was the World Series. Of course, we all, a lot of us think about Kirk Gibson, that walk-off home run in game one off of Dennis Eckersley. Kirk Gibson hobbling around the bases after an injury suffered in the NL Championship Series. And the Dodgers went on to win that World Series in 5 games. They have not won since. They are in a position to do so tonight. The man who caught that final pitch from Oral Hershiser is our next guest. He is Orioles broadcaster Rick Dempsey. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. I trust today finds you feeling well and healthy and all that good stuff. And I was just gonna ask you, what do you remember most about the day leading up to that game? You know, just the mood around the team, the mood when the game started, and what was going through your mind when you caught that final out?
Let me first say, Jeff.
You know, Rick, we're gonna have to call you back. We got a bad line here. It always happens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Always happens. So anyhow, as I was saying, Rick Dempsey, longtime major league catcher, caught the final out of the game. Tony Phillips is at the plate. Oral Hershiser, the Bulldog, on the mound. And Rick Dempsey as well in 83 with the Orioles. Man, had a great World Series for that really good Orioles team. It was the first year that Earl Weaver had stepped down as Orioles manager. And that was a terrific Orioles team. But he has, you know, thinking back to that 1988 World Series and the Oakland Athletics team they beat, the Athletics are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned, Kirk Gibson had the walk-off home run. Okay, now we'll try it again. Rick, I apologize for that. We had a crapola line. Hopefully it's better. Welcome again. That's much better.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I just want to thank you for having me on your show. As I was saying, I'm very excited about today. The Dodgers have a very good opportunity here to close this one out. And it would really be a shame from this point if they couldn't do it. But I really do believe that they will. I called the Dodgers in 6 games from the very beginning. And hopefully they'll make me a profit here tonight.
Okay, Rick, does Jeff asked me this earlier about the 60-game season and what will this do if the Dodgers, you know, break their little streak and win the World Series. Do you think that means anything to Dodgers fans that this year, you know, wasn't a 162-game season?
Well, you know, it is what it is, and it's the same for everybody. So I would think right now the impact of them winning the World Series is going to have just as much as it did back in 1988. This ball club has been a special club over the last 6-7 years. You know, they've been in playoff and World Series situations, and things just haven't gone well for them. But now they have really the best opportunity so far to really close it out tonight, and they should do so. I mean, the energy level is going to be massive by the time they get ready to play this game. And I think really one thing that is really working in their favor is the experience of being in playoff and World Series situations. So a lot of these young guys have got that behind them. And I know what it feels like to have blown a World Series. I did it in 1979 against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I take the full blame for that one. We were up 3-1, and we should have been able to close it out, but they just got the momentum and things turned around real quick. But this is a different situation for the Dodgers here. They've actually got 2 opportunities. You know, if they should not win tonight, they, you know, they could come back tomorrow and win it. But playoff experience is very important.
You know, one of the reasons the Dodgers brought you in was because you had that terrific 83 World Series. You were a veteran of World Series. You were a veteran of postseasons. What would, you know, take us back to that day before Game 5. What was that clubhouse like? And did you have a lot of guys talking to you about just the experience or trying to tap into your knowledge about what it takes to get through a postseason?
Well, let me go back to the beginning of that World Series, too, when I really had thoughts that we are up against a powerhouse, maybe one of the best offensive teams in the history of World Series games. And so I thought, well, everybody on that team's got so much power. We can't afford to make one mistake. We were not a big power team. We had a little bit here and there. But we had a good pitching staff, and I knew that if we just took it like one pitch at a time, I know that sounds corny, but one pitch at a time and adjust to the situation, I know we're the big-time underdog, David against Goliath there. But what turned out to probably be what I thought was one of the toughest series ever to call a ball game for our pitching staff turned out to be the easiest, and I'll tell you why, because every single hitter that came up telegraphed to me exactly what portion of the plate they were looking for. Canseco, McGuire, and all those guys, they came up with those open stances, and it looked odd to me that every now and then they would come up and pigeon toe, which means they're looking for the ball middle away, open stance looking for the ball middle in. It was so easy to go to whatever side of the plate I wanted to go to, and our pitching staff, you know, by that time we got into that situation, they pretty much had the strike zone down. They could throw a lot of strikes, and it was just a matter of really throwing the ball over the plate. And we got the momentum when Kurt Gibson hit that home run. We got that momentum, and you couldn't stop us. Yeah, it was easier to call ball games, so it became a very easy series to get through.
Okay, Rick, how much do you think having Walker Buehler for Clayton Kershaw to not, you know, have so much of the pressure on? Because, you know, Walker Buehler's getting Game 7. It's not going to be Clayton Kershaw. We've seen a better Clayton this World Series. How much do you think having a Walker Buehler taking a little bit of that pressure off has helped Clayton just to go out and, you know, throw strikes and get people out?
Well, you know, right now he's the best pitcher the Dodgers have. He throws more strikes. He's got a lot of movement on the ball. He can throw any one of his pitches, and even when he's behind in the count, he can go to off-speed pitches. Those are the kind of things I look for. And when a guy can do that, you can really keep hitters off balance. So tonight is his night. And I think if they play a good defensive game behind him tonight, that I think they'll close this one out, no doubt about it.
Now, Rick, I wanted to ask you as well. We're joined in conversation by Rick Dempsey, by the way. Look, the World Series you had in 83, when you hit 385, you had a home run, a couple of RBIs. It was against the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah. You were with the Orioles, and your OPS was 1.390. Tell us a little bit about what it's like for a player to go on a roll in the postseason and to have that type of series.
Well, it came down to, listen, just do what you need to do every single at bat. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to hit home runs. Don't swing too hard. Just put the ball in play. I know the first hit I got in that World Series was a double to right field that drove in a couple of big runs, and that took a huge weight off my back because I had never really been the offensive player that I should have been through most of my career. But like a 2,000-pound weight fell off my back, and I just relaxed, and I said, you know something, see the ball and hit it. Don't try to do too much. And in all playoff and World Series, I've always been able to be a different hitter than I was during the season when I was trying to get two hits a game, three hits a game, keep my batting average up, make Earl Weaver happy so that he keeps me in the lineup every day. So in a different mental approach. I know in the 1979, when we blew that World Series after being up 3-1, I can remember in 1983 coming in that last day to close it out. There, you could hear a pin drop in the clubhouse. Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken, myself, and a lot of other great players and pitchers. we knew that we had to focus on that last day to get this thing over with. We were up against a Hall of Fame team with Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and Mike Schmidt and guys like that. We knew we had to be really focused. We didn't take it for granted. And that's the feeling that I had with the Dodgers in that fifth game also. Don't take it for granted that because we have a 3-1 lead that this thing is over with. Even with Oral Hershiser on the mound, you still have to go out there and execute. And I think we knew we were capable of doing it, so the confidence level was up. When Bob Costas called us the worst World Series team in history on paper, he did us a huge, huge favor because we did not lack confidence in ourselves.
Rick, it was really good of you to join us. Thanks so much. Stay safe, be well. We look forward to chatting again next year.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, I got a 6-2 win tonight for the Dodgers.
There you go. Take care. Thanks, Rick.
All right, baby.
All righty. Rick Dempsey, Baltimore Orioles broadcaster. Let me read you Rick Dempsey's regular season numbers. He played 1,765 games, hit .233. This is career. Mm-hmm. Hit .233 with a .666, sign of the devil, .666 OPS. Rick Dempsey in the postseason. This gets to his point. Rick Dempsey in the postseason, 25 games, .885 OPS, a .303 hitter. Not only did he hit .385 in that World Series, he hit .400 for the Dodgers in their win over the Mets in '88. That was at the age of 38, by the way.
Mm.
He hit .400 for the Orioles in their win over the California Angels and .286 in a seven-game series. That was that loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I guess, you know, the point I'm making there is that it was interesting hearing Rick talk about how in the postseason, a lot of times, it's not that you're not worried about what you're doing, but it's just, it's do what you got to do in that moment. Yes, it's an individual game. Baseball's an individual game. You're paid for individual stats.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that the postseason and the World Series is a time where it really does come about team.
I think you have to be within yourself. I think you have to know yourself. I think you have to know what you can't do. I think that's more important than knowing what you can do. You're comfortable in what you can do. It's that if I can't hit a breaking ball, I'm going to try my best not to swing at it and swing at the thing that I do well, whatever that is. So whatever he liked, that's what he was trying to attack. And then you gain a little confidence when you do it one time, and then it carries over to the next at bat, and maybe you do it again. I do think a little bit of those numbers is – that, you're not game planned as much against as somebody that's super good.
Yeah.
Brandon Lowe. Brandon Lowe was the best hitter they had. He's getting carved up.
Like they've spent time talking about what he's doing and what he's not doing.
The only way we're going to beat the Rays is we have to try and get him out.
They talked about Brett Phillips?
Not a chance.
I also wonder, I should have asked Rick if Earl or Tommy Lasorda gave him a card that said, if Jose Canseco goes pigeon-toed. I thought it was interesting, hey? Looking at the guy's feet.
It's little things, right?
It was great to have Rick join us. And I think the other thing too is, right, you hit a 2-run double in game 88, whatever, it feels good.
Yeah.
But hitting a 2-run double in game 1 of the World Series is like, you're a little more aware that, geez, we could only be playing 3 more games after
this. Yeah, now me hitting a double in game 88 kept me in the, so I could play in game 89.
You were playing.
So a little different, but
you were playing for the most important thing: ka-ching and service time. No dummy. No. Barkers did not raise any dummies. I always tell people 590-590 is a text line. It's Baseball Central. It's Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Push the mic on button. Why do I always do that? It's like I don't look. I just. I just kind of push whatever. I've got all these buttons. Half of them I never use. What does dump mean? Do I want to do that? No, probably not. Oh, okay. All right. What are you writing?
Nothing.
You're writing something.
No.
Yes, you are.
Drawing lines.
Oh, okay. Thought you were making notes.
Thanks for noticing.
Names and location, please, on your texts. The season is over, by the way. We have to take calls at some point. Mm. Let's make more work for the folks behind the glass.
Yes. Do something.
Derek just looks now. Pulled his attention away from Champions League. Oh. Don't be mad. Don't be mad. Jesus.
He's a new daddy. He hasn't slept
so
in a
sensitive.
While.
Yes, I'm buying you a coffee today.
Save that tape.
That's not true. I buy coffee a lot.
Save that tape, buddy.
Bull.
Are you kidding me?
Come on. Anyhow, enough mirth and merriment. Parker, if Tampa Bay loses tonight and their season is done, do you think there's much of a difference in their mental state versus a regular season of 162 games where they went to the playoffs and then lost the World Series? It's actually an interesting point. We won't know, obviously, until the World Series is over, but it would be interesting to find out from a player, what does it feel like now? You know, because you haven't played. And I think this is where baseball players might be more different than others, because yes, the baseball season was interrupted, but by and large, this is when you would be finishing if you were in the World Series. You know, this is going to be probably of all the professional sports in North America, with the exception of the NFL, because it's being played now, this will probably be the most normal offseason. You're going to have free agency. You know, you're going to have spring training scheduled to start at the time. It looks as if right now the regular season will start at the same time.
Yeah.
So the off season for players is going. It's going to be relatively easy, I think, to manage your off season workload if you're a player and to get ready for next year. But yeah, I wonder. You know, Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated has been in the bubble for as long as the players have been there, because he's part of the Fox Network coverage. And I would urge you to read his piece about life in the bubble. And again, as Tom points out, keep in mind it's the four seasons. So, you know, it's
not a motel.
But when you read this piece and you find out how restricted the players have been, you know, it'll be a fascinating case study when this is done, and just finding out what it was like and what guys feel.
This
like.
Is one of those questions that me and you can't answer.
No,
only a player can answer how he's going to handle being away from the bubble and, you know, having a little bit of a normal life. Even when he gets out of that, it's not going to be normal.
Well, it's Stephen Milton. Hey, guys, this might be why Kershaw still has gas in the tank. 162, and he's postseason Kershaw of old. Yeah, I mentioned this, and I think people have bought into this. It's not rocket science, but, Kevin, I really do think the fact that even though it's October 27th, we are asking guys are only pitching in their 15th or 16th game of the year. I think that explains why we're seeing what we're seeing from guys. I think guys are probably, maybe you wouldn't agree with me, the guys pitching in this postseason right now are probably in better shape in terms of their arms, in terms of their rest, in terms of their bodies than any other World Series teams we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt. Yeah, the adding velocity that you've talked about a lot, about the Rays arms and the mile per hour went up a couple of ticks. That's
I don't know about the hitters though. Would there be that much? Would they feel any healthier now than they would if this was a game? I don't know, game 185 of the year.
I mean, I'm assuming it's not going to hurt either. But it's all about who you're facing.
Like, that's true.
Yeah, you know,
the pitchers.
If he's giving me good pitches to hit, I'm going to be healthy.
Game doesn't start until he throws the ball either. So
there you go. But the Kershaw thing, you know, I think he's healthier for, you know, that 60 game season may have a lot to do with it. I think his stuff is a little bit better. I think his slider cutter is a better pitch than it's been in years past. Velocity for me, I don't think it's went up. I know everybody's saying it's went up a mile per hour. What's that? You know, if you throw 89 and then you throw 90, well, I don't see the big difference in that. I just think his secondary pitches, a lot more has to do with his slider and his cutter are better.
Mm-hmm.
Health, mechanics, your arms faster, you know, it's getting to the slot better, whatever it is, staying over the rubber more, whatever it is. That pitch seems to be better, and he's getting more people out.
Right, and he's facing a team, and I'm not making excuses for Tampa, but he's facing a team whose best player is scuffling,
yep.
And whose other best hitter, Austin Meadows,
that
probably is.
And I think the Dodgers organizations have come to the realization that third time through the lineup,
yep.
That ain't going to work.
Ken and Barry, hey guys, if the season ends tonight, when do you guys realistically see us watching baseball again? Where will our home team be playing, and will it be a full season? I think it's going to be, you know, again, who knows what the hell the pandemic brings, Kevin. But right now, I think we're going to have 162. Spring training is going to start on time. You know, baseball's proven to its players that it can manage this.
Yeah.
I think the players, they'll be a little more, you know, we need to see how much residual animosity there is from some of the labor stuff that went on.
Yeah.
But the players are going to have made some money this year because baseball was able to do this. Yeah, but they've made money. I mean, they haven't lost it. Correct. They haven't lost as much as they could have. So, yep. I mean, baseball's plans worked. And as for the Blue Jays, I mean, I think they're going to be in, you know, we're talking about March or April. Okay. And I think the Blue Jays will be playing in Toronto in
April. If they're not,
if they're not
worried more about the what's going on in the world than where the Blue Jays are playing.
Yeah, I was going to say, if the Blue Jays aren't playing home games, then we'll be worrying about a lot of other things in addition to Major League Baseball. And I've said this, I think a lot will depend on what happens next week. A lot will depend on the change in tone. I absolutely believe that the whole opening of the Canadian border is less of a health issue now than it is a political issue. But, I mean, I'm optimistic. I think the Jays will be playing here next year. I don't know. I would doubt that we will be seeing a lot of fans in the stands. But I think the Jays will be here, and I do think that at some point early in the season you'll be seeing fans in the stands. I mean, clearly there will be people in the stands in most of the cities in the U.S. when baseball starts off. I mean, college football is pushing through, the NFL is pushing through. Baseball's got, what, 11,000, 10,000 people in the stands right now. I think that's where we are. But again, the caveat is, you know, the pandemic is going to determine what happens. It's not the other way around. Hindsight is 20/20. Boy, is it ever, especially this year. But it's worth noting that having watched the Rays' playoff run, Charlie's game one plan for Shue and Ray was a thing of beauty, and he knew exactly what he was doing. Nobody has pitched them better except Cole and Buehler.
Yeah. Look, the reason why the Jays pitched who they pitched is not because they wanted to pitch those guys at that time. It's because they didn't have a choice.
They made the best of a crap situation.
Exactly. You know, the more different arms you can throw at a lineup, the better chances you're going to have of getting them out. The more times I see a pitcher, the better chance I have of hitting that pitcher. If I see a different pitcher every at bat that I have, it's going to be that much harder.
Okay, here's what I want to ask you about, because I had this discussion with somebody over the weekend, and I forgot I was going to ask you yesterday, but you know, we've all talked about the Rays, the different arm angles.
Yeah.
What is harder for a hitter to adjust to? Up and down, side to side.
Up and down. Side to side, I've seen that enough. Up and down is odd. You know, it wasn't a thing when I played. You don't ever pitch up. You the ball. That's a no-no. Pitch down.
I'm sorry. I meant pitcher's arm. What's harder? You know, a pitcher throwing high up or a pitcher throwing...
Oh, you mean 12-6 instead
I'm
of
sorry.
From the
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
Well, short arm, like Nick Anderson, short arms the ball a little bit. That's hard to pick up because you see the ball late. Fairbanks is like an iron mic. His arm's way up. He throws 100.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I see the ball better, but it gets on you in a hurry. And he's a giant human. So it's, you know, all of these things go of, you know, it's about location. You have to zone in on what you do well. That is, you know, that's what the Dodgers do better than any lineup in baseball, period, end of story, is they, a lot of the times, focus in on what they do as an individual better than what you're trying to do against them. If I can't hit a curveball and you throw a curveball and the league's hitting a buck 30 off it, why would I look curveball? That's what the Dodgers do. The Dodgers are saying the same thing I've been saying since I've been watching the Blue Jays in 2020, is why, if you can't hit something, why are you looking for it? That's what the Dodgers try to do, and it seems to be working out more times than not. Max Muncy goes up and looks for something for me that looks like out over the plate and hard until two strikes. Seems to be working. Not a great hitter, but he has a great mindset of when he walks to the plate, give myself an opportunity to hit this ball as hard as I can possibly hit it. To do that, I can't cover that entire plate. 17 inches, I can't do that. No hitter can. So I'm going to zone in on my little box. I tell you, I talk to this with you all the time about the little box. Mookie Betts, zone in on his box, whatever that is. Go up, look for it until you get the two strikes, and then you battle. You choke up and do what you can to put the ball in play. That's what they do. And the arm angles just add a different element to it because it's something you don't see a lot of. And that's why the Rays are where they're at, is because they throw all that stuff at you. And on top of that, they have really good stuff. Stuff and arm angles going together, that makes it very hard for a hitter to stay on time. Timing is hitting. I want to get my front foot down in an athletic position so I can throw my hands in the barrel at the baseball. If I can't do that because all the arm angles and the stuff, that means I'm getting out a lot and you're winning more games than I'm winning.
And it's a thing you have to see for yourself, right? You can't have someone tell you about it, or
I mean, the Rays aren't really tricking you. I got a really hard fastball and something spinning. Some have curveball, some have slider. I know it's hard, and I know it's from a different arm angle. Now I just got to find his arm slot, zone in on that, and then zone in where I want the ball, not where he wants to get me out at. It's a lot, and do it in that amount of time. That's good luck. Yeah, good luck.
So a reminder, Game 6 of the World Series goes tonight. It'll be Blake Snell on the mound for the Rays, Tony Gonsolin for the Dodgers. Dave Roberts is saying that Tony Gonsolin's not an opener. He's a starter. He wants 5 or 6 from him. Yeah, we shall see. Our TV and radio pregame will be at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and of course on the TV side on Sportsnet Ontario. First pitch is set to fly just after 8 o'clock. Dan Shulman, Chris Singleton, Jessica Mendoza with a call on the radio side. Both Dan and Jessica will join Tim and Sid, by the way, this afternoon. Matt Vasgersian, Buck Martinez with a call on the TV side. Game 6, first pitch after 8 o'clock. We'll be back here tomorrow to talk about the Rays 4-1 win and to look ahead to Game 7. More baseball talk ahead on Writer's Block.